If you like what we do here on Skiba News Nation, please like and subscribe, and also share with others so that we can grow the biggest truth-seeking community on the internet. Huge shout out to all of our Patreon supporters. We couldn't do this show without you, so I just wanted to say thank you. And if you want to help support us, go to patreon.com/Skiba News Nation.
I want to know what the truth is. And I hope that people, my son, anybody, if my name comes up, whether you like me, whether you agree with me or not, at least you can respect the fact that he's on a quest for truth. He's on a quest for truth.
Welcome to Skiba News Nation. Bringing you unfiltered views, news, interviews, discussions, and more. And now, here's your host, Jeremiah Skiba, award-winning musician and son of Rob Skiba.
Hey, Skiba News Nation family, we're excited to have an awesome guest on the show today. He's a truth seeker. Join Jake and I as we welcome Bear Independent, TJ Morris, on Skiba News Nation. So welcome to Skiba News Nation. Thank you for coming on.
I appreciate y'all having me. Thank you very much. I follow the show. I appreciate what you guys are doing, so happy to be here.
Oh, wow. That means a lot to us. Firstly, I'd like to express how huge fans me and Jake are of your work as well. But for those of our audience who may not be familiar with your work, can you kind of share a little bit about what you do and who you are and that kind of thing?
Yeah, sure. I'll give you the thumbnail sketch, which is still going to take a hot minute, but bear with me. Let's see. Ran away from the Christian church literally and figuratively at the age of 15 because I saw a bunch of Christians doing messed up stuff. And I wasn't spiritually mature enough yet to realize that people make mistakes, the Father doesn't. So I literally and figuratively ran away and started playing drums in satanic heavy metal bands, spent a decade in apostasy, fighting against the creator of the universe, which is stupid because he has unlimited resources and I don't. So he won, praise Yah. And about 8-9 years ago, I got baptized again into the non-denominational evangelical church. Watched that fall apart because of the egos of men. Got pissed off again. Started reading my Bible and realized there's a whole bunch of stuff in here that nobody ever told me about before. And that made me even more mad. And so I was screaming at the Father and I said, "How come nobody ever told me this?" And he said, "How long have you owned my word for, son?" I said, "Oh, yeah, my bad. Sorry, Dad. I guess I'll read this book and do what it says." So that's how I began to come to a whole Bible understanding, what some would call Torah observant or Torah pursuing or whatever. I don't care. I eschew the labels. We were living in North Texas at the time. We moved to Eastern Oklahoma, started a little YouTube channel, and one day the Father said, "Read my word." And I said, "I am." And he said, "On camera, you idiot." And I said, "I didn't sign up for that." And he said, "Tough cookies, bro, read my word." And so I started reading Genesis 1 on camera about 4 or 5 years ago, 5 years ago. And as a result, the channel has grown from 2,000 subscribers to 200,000 and change. And then the YouTube channel, Bear Independent, became kind of the war chest, if you will, for myriad different things. And so I've got 5 businesses and 2 ministries. And so I have Bear Independent. I'm the CEO and founder of Refuge Medical. We make the best first aid kits on planet Earth. And Refuge Training, we teach people the fine art of how to not die. And I do small and medium-sized business consulting, and I do preparedness consulting. And then we've got Grindstone Ministries, which is a nationally registered 501c3 that does pro bono disaster relief after hurricanes and tornadoes. And I've got Caleb House, Caleb with a K, that does restoration of juvenile human trafficking survivors.
Wow.
And then I read my Bible on camera. I do Intel Briefs Monday, Wednesday, Friday on YouTube. And I've got a Patreon page and all that other stuff.
Awesome. That's cool. I love the first aid thing because I'm always losing my first aid kit. I cut myself more than, not on purpose, but like I'll split a finger and I'll need something and I can't find it. But that's awesome, man. All those things are really cool.
Thank you.
Awesome. Yeah. Welcome, Bear. Thank you for joining us. You know, we've been trying to do our news broadcast for nearly 2 years now. And for many a time, we've used some of your sit rep clips. And we just love what you're doing with, you know, your Bear Independent channel and also with Caleb House. It's very inspiring. And kind of what we're trying to do with our channel here, we're trying to reach the next generation. You know, there's a lot of people who are coming up with this overload of information when it comes to all the conspiracies and the different topics of mainstream media that they're trying to push down our throat. And so we're just trying to navigate it ourselves. You know, we don't claim to be any expert on any topic in particular, but we are trying to, you know, just try to float the boat, so to speak, you know, when it comes to all these topics that we're presented with. And well, I'm really excited to get into some of our discussion since you do the sit rep every week. And I highly suggest anybody who's watching right now to go and check out Bear's sit reps. I really love just the candid nature and straight to the point, and breaking down the sea of information is really refreshing. And you know, recently there's been some legislation passed that's very interesting. It's kind of an attack on the freedom of speech here in the United States. And I wanted to ask some of your analysis of this. And you know, apparently there's a ban coming to ban Semitic language. And I wanted to ask your thoughts on this coming out recently.
So you're talking about HR 6090, I believe that it is, ban on anti-Semitic language. And thus far, I haven't fully studied the wording of the bill. And so I've heard reporting on the reports thus far. But it appears that literally under this bill, the areas of the New Testament where it talks about the Yehudim giving up Messiah to Pontius Pilate, you wouldn't be allowed to say that. That would be anti-Semitic hate speech, even though it's historical fact with a multitude of witnesses. The curtailing of speech in of itself is an indication of an end state empire, in my opinion. Equating speech to violence is retardation. Violence is violence. You can say whatever words you want to me and I can turn around and walk away. You punch me in the face, that's a different conversation. You shoot me, that's a different conversation. And you, one would argue, there's life and death is in the power of the tongue, brother. Yeah, but I'm not prophesying. I'm not speaking cursings or blessings over you. I should have the right to say whatever I feel led to say. And of course, the government is trying to take that away. One of the things that I think, sorry, I'm in a tirade here, a little bit of a rabbit hole, but one of the things that I think that most people don't actually onboard reading the scriptures, which they should. Yeshua's government killed him. Yeshua's government killed him. The Yehudim handed him over to the government and they crucified him. Moshe's government tried to kill him. The Maccabean Rebellion under, what is his name, Antiochus Epiphanes and the Seleucid Dynasty, that was the government that tried to kill them. And then, you know, Hanukkah, light the menorah comes out of that. There is a well-established biblical and historical trend of governments trying to kill believers in Messiah. And it typically starts with, hey, you're not allowed to say that. So I don't really like HR 6090. Knowing what I know about it thus far.
Yeah, well, I like to talk about how we've exited the golden age of the internet, and we're seeing more and more censorship being rolled out on platforms like YouTube, and people who have previously been able to speak and share an alternative perspective are being squashed. And I like to tell the joke, you know who controls you by WHO you can't criticize, right? you know, it's really telling, and I think very important for people to recognize how we live in a society where they're playing this wizardry game of language, and they use language to control. And I mean, this ties into another you know, piece of legislation that they're passing through Congress. Something that passed almost unanimously recently was the TikTok ban. And I wanted maybe to, you know, add to this topic of censorship of speech with what they're doing with that fast growing platform that was giving a voice to the everyday person. And, you know, they're claiming, of course, spy technology and China and, you know, all that kind of stuff. But why do you really think they're trying to ban TikTok?
Well, not only did they ban TikTok, but then they also reinstated Section 702 FISA of warrantless search for American citizens. Thanks. Appreciate that, government. So on the surface, I do think it's a major contributing factor to why the government would want TikTok shut down. They claim, well, it's owned by China and China's collecting all that user data. Yeah, of course they are. And so is every other platform. YouTube, which is owned by Google, which is owned by literally Alphabet Corp, Meta, which owns Facebook and Instagram. All these platforms collect your user data, all of them. And that's why the platform is free, is because they collect that, what's called digital exhaust on you, and they use that for targeted advertising that they sell to people that have companies. So if I say, I'm looking for men between 25 and 45 that are bearded and read the scriptures and live in the center of the country, they can use that digital exhaust to target ads towards us. That's where the value in the platform comes from. That's why it's free. Otherwise, they would charge you to use it. So is that happening? Absolutely. But everybody does that. I think the reason that the United States government wants TikTok shut down is not because it represents some type of strategic threat to the United States of America. It's because they don't control it, unlike Meta or Google or YouTube or any of these other platforms. They don't have their fingers in it, which is why they want ByteDance, the company that owns TikTok, to divest its ownership into American hands. Because it's going to be easier for the American intelligence network to co-opt American owners of TikTok than to co-opt Chinese owners of TikTok. And this whole concept of businesses operating abroad, Chinese businesses operating abroad, they're subject to the CCP rules and regulations. That's 100% true. It's less understood, less talked about, that the same thing typically goes for the highest echelons of American businesses. They may not be subject, but in many cases they are co-opted. And then you get into the subject matter of what's on TikTok. There's now 90% of it is people doing stupid dances and kitty cats and all this other bull crap. But 10% of it is people connecting the dots saying, oh, maybe we're going to get kicked off YouTube probably. Maybe that thing that happened September 11, 2001 wasn't what they said it was. Maybe that thing that happened in 2019 wasn't what they said it was. Maybe that thing that happened October 7th, 2023, over there in the land, Eretz Yisrael, wasn't what they said it was. You know, and so people are starting to connect the dots here. Hey, wait a minute. The Bill of Rights says that I'm supposed to have all these things that are given to me by God, the creator of the universe, and it's a negative bill, meaning that it says the government cannot infringe upon these things, but they're infringing upon all of them. And so it had become an organic platform for people to share what could be considered true. And since the American government doesn't have their tentacles in it, they want it shut down because I think we're in an end stage empire. A lot of people say, Bear, we're in end times. We're coming up on end times. Maybe. We're not in end times. If we're in end times, John owes me an explanation. He extrapolated a whole bunch of stuff in Revelation. This is not end times. Nobody's trying to cut our heads off with dull machetes right now for our belief in Messiah. We might be knocking on the door of it, but I think really what we're experiencing from the American Western perspective is the decline of an empire that, because of our biblical worldview, makes it feel like it's end times. And it's not end times. It's just potentially the decline of the American empire. And so Sir John Glubb, The Fate of Empires, 250-year cycles for empires to rise and fall. We're 248-ish years into that from 1776, today in 2024. If you start counting at other dates, you might end up with a different length of time in between now and when the American empire fails. But either way, all the indicators are there. Trouble on our border, monetary policy, tyranny in Washington, D.C. You've got social unrest, civil unrest. You've got factions inside of the social structure of the United States of America. You have a huge threat of balkanization. Texas storing gold in their depository, so they could potentially issue their own currency. All these little breakaway republics and nations inside of the United States, all these things are indicators of an end-stage empire. We're there, including the tyranny of the government being able to tell you what you can and can't say, being able to tell people who own companies what they can and can't do, taking upwards of 70% of your income, letting people who aren't legal citizens into the country to degrade morale and erode the social fabric of America. We're there. But that's why I think they want TikTok down. There's too many people connecting all the dots, and all those dots, once you connect that picture, it looks like there's a bunch of corrupt tyrants in DC, and there's this undercurrent of, hey, maybe it's time to do tar and feather stuff again. You know, the whiskey rebellion, Austin Tea Party, you know, 2% tax, 3% tax. I pay 70% of my income to the government.
Wow.
70.
Wow.
Yeah. Sorry, wow, I'm ranting.
I know there's the two sides of the equation, which is the freedoms that they're trying to take away, but also the legislation that is empowering the government to not only spy on us, but to manipulate us. I believe I've heard in the past you talk about the Smith-Mundt Act, that the Biden administration re-upped the ability for the U.S. government to influence media sources, which it gets pretty dystopian very quickly when you start to read through some of the things that they're empowering the government currently. And that happened back during the Obama administration. And then, of course, we see the ripple effects with what happened during the COVID, you know, crisis and such, as they manipulated Twitter. They manipulated the ability for doctors who had alternative perspectives on the whole, you know, pandemic thing to be able to speak out. And it's really, maybe you could speak on, you know, that side of the equation, where they're saying TikTok is this basically a monitoring app, but then they're just right alongside it still monitoring the people that they're trying to say, oh, we need to take TikTok down because it's spying on people, even though they're doing just that.
So the director of the FBI, Christopher Wray, said the number one threat to the United States of America right now is homegrown domestic terrorism and extremists. And then he went on to define those extremists as essentially us, people who live in the middle of the country, who have a deep faith in the creator that's in the Bible, who are covered by the blood of the lamb, who have a little bit of food put back and know their neighbors. We are the extremist threat. So, of course, they don't want us collaborating, right? That's why you can't say certain words on certain platforms. Are they spying on us? Of course they're spying on us. It's not that TikTok, what TikTok does is a problem. It's who TikTok does it for that's the problem, as far as the government is concerned. It's a massive collections platform. By the way, if you have one of these, this is a cell phone, you're carrying a Generation 7 collections device in your pocket. And you are paying, for the opportunity for them to influence you and propagandize you and track your every movement. And so, being frank, you know, it's one thing to sit around and bitch about the government. They shouldn't do this. They shouldn't do that. I think we're way past that, honestly. Yep. And this is not a, it's not a call to violence. It's not a call to arms, but it is a call to come out of her, my people, so you partake not of her sins and receive not of her plagues, right? Leviticus 19 is about be set apart as I, Yahuwah, your Elohim, am set apart. And we're over here, we're like, well, we live in the country and I've got sheep and I've got homies and we like to hang out down by the creek. Also, did you see what the propaganda machine said today? At some point, we've got to pull ourselves out of that. That system is not for us. It doesn't benefit us. And even what y'all are doing, what I'm trying to do, which is to use a phrase borrowed from my brother Saw, to cut Goliath's head off with his own sword, right? If I can use this platform to fight against the propaganda, to reach the people of the Most High, to hopefully, for the preservation of life, encourage other brothers and sisters who are out there to keep going, be set apart as he is set apart. That's, I think, where we need to start aiming our focus and direction. Because the system is going to collapse. This beast system in Washington, D.C. is going to collapse under its own weight. They can't stay funded. They have no authority other than what we give them. Have you seen the air quote commander in chief? The dude's a joke, right? Our elections don't matter. We know that from Dominion voting machines. The whole thing is bread and circuses. Literally, Steven Spielberg, the Hollywood director, literally, Steven Spielberg is running Biden's 2024 campaign. It couldn't be more obvious. But we're over here like, oh, it's terrible. We should do something about it. No, that do not be conformed to the nations. Do not take daughters of them for wives. Do not mix your seed with them. Have nothing to do with them. Why? Because they might not be able to take you in warfare, but they can erode the ethos of who you are as a people group set apart unto Yah. And so I think we need to be doing a better job of being separated from all this BS. And then when we're not, when we do engage with it, when you pick up your cell phone, treat it as a loaded firearm. Mm-hmm. This is a tool. It's a weapon, and it's being used for information warfare 24/7, 365. And so don't allow yourself to be propagandized. We're paying for the right for them to propagandize us and collect all of our data. That's retarded. At some point, we should probably stop doing that, right? And so we pay them. They collect our information. Then we're like, you shouldn't collect my information. They're like, dude, that's the reason I made the app in the first place, was to collect your information. Of course we're going to keep collecting your information. Oh, all right. Well, as long as I'm scrolling stuff that's pro-Yah, pro-conspiracy theory, pro-homesteading, I'm good. No, dude, you're still participating in that system. And at some point, there's going to come a time where we have to separate from it. Yeshua talks about that in Matthew 24. There's going to come a time where if you're in Jerusalem, flee to the mountains now. Run. You should have already bugged out. But if you haven't, you got to run. And that's the point. A whole bunch of people have physically separated themselves from the beast system. They're out in the country. They've got neighbors. They got sheep. They're observing the Moedim. They're keeping Shabbat. That's great. It's beautiful. It's wonderful. But in their brain and in their heart, they're still slaves in Egypt. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Yeah. It's kind of like people are always asking, hey, when's the mark of the beast going to get here? Let me just check this thing that I buy, sell, you know, am indoctrinated by. It's like a Holy Spirit. It's got Bigsby or Cortana or Siri or whatever tells me what to think, believe, and do.
And now it's got AI. Now it's got AI, which is creepier.
Did you see that Meta shutdown? Meta had spent 48 hours. They took their AI and had it plow 1 million scientific white papers in 48 hours, and then they shut it down. And the working hypothesis as to why they shut it down was the conclusions that it came to are the antithesis of the bull crap that we're being force-fed with these devices every day.
That's crazy.
Wow. It's amazing to see how something that the technology that can crunch the numbers can be used, one, for good and evil. And that's really what these are, is it's the tree of the knowledge of good and evil right in each of our pockets. And the same device that you can dive deep into the scriptures far beyond anything some of our forefathers have been able to do, right? You used to have to go to a seminary and learn Latin and Greek, and you had to do all these different things to be able to interpret the word and read it for yourself. You used to have a priest to tell you what to believe. And now the everyday layperson has access to the scriptures to be able to walk out and understand the Father's heart far beyond, I believe, any generation, you know, before. And that's amazing. But then in the same device, you can be addicted to pornography. You can be doom and glooming from all the just stuff. And it's amazing the duality in the technology we have.
That's the point I was going to make, because I do agree as far as knowledge of the tree of fruit, access to the tree of knowledge of good and evil, right? I do agree with that. And to be able to facilitate study of the word, it's an excellent tool. It's a computer. We have computers in our pockets. It's beautiful. Do we have the self-control to use it only for that? That's the thing, right? Would we, hypothetical question, if we're eating the fruit of the tree of, you know, knowledge of good and evil, it's already in our hand. We got it. We carry it around in our pocket. Would it have been better off to have never had it in the first place? And like Yeshua says, be like these little children, just sit in my lap. And maybe all you know about scriptures is love God with everything you got, love your neighbor as yourself. Maybe that's all you know about it, but on this hangs all the Torah and the prophets. And if you could do these two things and walk in that to the best of your ability, you know, Revelation 22:14, behold, I come swiftly to reward each man according to his works. And your understanding of scripture was I should love God with everything that I've got and love my neighbor as myself. And that's all you executed on, because that's all the knowledge you had. Cost benefit analysis. Is it better or worse that we now carry the apple or the pomegranate or whatever your doctrinal teaching is? We carry the fruit of the tree of knowledge of good and evil in our pockets every day without the self-control and the personal maturity to only use it in ways that make the Creator smile. Because I know, like, this thing is a temptation device as much as it is a research library.
Yep.
It's the concept of to whom much is given, much is required. And in our ignorance, you know, he's more forgiving, you know, but when we have the ability to be more than those who've come before us, it's almost like this is the greatest test ever. It's no longer fighting the giant, you know, who's running at you with a spear. It's the spiritual, intellectual, you know, mind, you know, battle that people have to fight in today's world. That's the kind of, I mean, I'm sure there's going to be a time where, you know, people are going to have to stand up to their own giants in, you know, a physical way, but it truly is a massive undertaking to fight back against the temptations and the distractions that this age is presenting to us. But at the same time, it's the greatest opportunity ever. Go ahead.
So something that jumps out to me that I just feel led to share. If/when that day comes where we have to flee to the wilderness, you know, Revelation 12, and the dragon was enraged with the woman and went to make war with the remnant of her seed, right? If/when that's you when that happens, I feel like I shouldn't have to say this, but I'm gonna. Don't bring your cell phone with you, okay? When we go run operations for Caleb House, we don't bring our cell phones with us. So if you're fleeing the beast, don't bring the tracking device in your pocket when you flee the beast. I just have to throw that out there. When you flee to the wilderness, it needs to be more than just physically, so mentally, emotionally, spiritually as well. Don't bring the seventh generation intelligence collections device with you when you're trying to evade the enemy. Just throwing that out there.
Just one final topic on this information question, which is, while we know that these devices manipulate us, how do we still navigate the influx of information and just juggling so many balls of different topics and conspiracies and do it in a way that we can still be effective watchmen?
So that's a good question. Info overload versus being an effective watchman. Frequency matters a lot. You know, if you PT, do physical training every day, right? You grow stronger at it every day. But if you do it for hours every day, sooner or later, you're going to start breaking yourself, right? And so all good things in moderation, right? A little bit of wine on a Rev Shabbat and a piece of bread, good to go. If you drink a box of wine every day, not good to go. Not like, see what I mean? And so it's the same thing. We spend more time with these devices than we do with the people that the Father has given us to steward, our family. And so the number one way to combat information overload is put the damn thing down and walk away, right? And so if you constrain your access to the device, you de facto limit the amount of influence that it has on you in the first place. And then look for sources that are providing you truthful information, even if it's information you disagree with, but is it truthful with relatively low spin, low biases, or admitted biases? Like, I admit my bias all the time. I'm a son of the Most High. I'm a busted up sinner that has been redeemed by the blood of the Lamb. I drink whiskey and say four-letter words. I'm also an ordained pastor. I live in the middle of the country, and I'm generally conservative, especially fiscally, right? So my biases are out there. It's pretty obvious who I am as a person. But look for sources of information that are truthful in their biases with no spin or as little spin as possible. And then that's what you consume. And think of it as consumption, because, you know, a lot of us keep Leviticus 11, clean and unclean foods, right? We hyperfixate on what we eat with our mouth without hyperfixating on what we eat with our eyeballs and our ears. And I would submit to you that what we eat with our eyes and our ears is at least as effective in affecting us as what we put in our mouth every day. And you spend way more time consuming information with your eyes than you do eating food with your mouth. So be careful what you look at. Literally and figuratively, be careful what you look at. Versus being a watchman on the wall. You brought up the Holy Spirit earlier, the Ruach HaKodesh, John 16, which will convict you concerning sin, righteousness, and judgment. And then you've also got fruits of the Spirit, gifts of the Spirit, so forth and so on. Dude, I don't need the phone to tell me that something's coming. I need the Spirit to tell me something is coming. And so it is way more important to operate in the Spirit as a son or a daughter of the Most High than it is to have the most up-to-date information that I can possibly get. Now, you want information. Intel drives operations, right? Like, that's important. I want the information for good decision making. But my go, no go is from the Ruach HaKodesh, the Holy Spirit. And being a watchman on a wall, right? To what end? To warn the nation of Israel, not the nation state, the Father's chosen people, Genesis 32, those who are striving with Elohim, who have overcome with Elohim, and who are ruling with Elohim, Genesis 32. And those, Romans 11, 16, who are grafted into the tree of life being a euphemism for Israel. Oh, I believe in Jesus. Congratulations, you're in Ketubah covenant with a Jewish guy. Read Matthew chapter 1. But I digress. For why? Why am I a watchman on the wall? To warn Israel? Maybe. Dude, a whole bunch of them didn't listen to Moshe. A whole bunch of them didn't listen to Yeshua. Right? Or Ezekiel. Or Jeremiah, or Isaiah, or Habakkuk, or pick a man of Elohim. The deal with a man of Elohim that the Father makes is not you have to go convict these people. The deal is you have to speak my word. If you don't speak my word, their blood is on your hands. But if you do speak my word, their blood is on their hands. It's not up to you whether or not they receive my word. You just go speak it. Why did Jonah get so pissed in Nineveh? Because he didn't think those heathens deserved to be saved, and 110,000 men were saved that day. Jonah's like, this sucks. I didn't want this to happen. I hate these guys. They should all be dead. And different conversation. But the point here is, a man of Elohim, his job is to speak the word of Elohim, not to convict. That's the Spirit's job. So if I'm a watchman on the wall trying to collect all this information so that I can warn Israel, the Father's chosen people, what information am I collecting? It should be signs and appointed times, prophecy, and maybe how these events of the day line up with signs and appointed times and prophecy. But even then, there's a danger in that. Because if you go forth and say, I prophesy in the name of Yahuwah my Elohim that this thing shall come to pass on this day, and it doesn't happen, Deuteronomy says, don't fear that dude. Fear with the Hebrew connotation of deeply respect. So guess what? You get to play that game one time. And if it doesn't come true, we don't have to listen to you anymore. So there's definitely a line to walk as far as being a watchman is concerned as well. I think that this could be. I see these things coming. And as far as biblical prophecy and the fulfillment of, even Yeshua says, no man knows the day or the hour. Therefore, wait and be watchful, which is what you're trying to do. So reduce the amount of information that you're consuming. Let what you're consuming be of Yah, of Elohim. And then take that information, piece it together by the Spirit in a way that makes sense so you can make predictions, not prophecy. And here's the other thing. Most people that I know that are into preparedness or are looking for fulfillment of biblical prophecy think we're on the cusp of end times. They are living. Their whole life is predicated on when that day comes, then I'll be validated. They're living today for some point in the future that may or may not happen during their lifetime. It's a huge waste of time. And frankly, it's a huge waste of the giftings, talents, and delights that the Father gave you in the first place. What are you supposed to be doing today to be his hands and feet? Who are you supposed to minister to today? Did you tell your wife you loved her today? Did you hang out with your kids today? Did you pray with a brother today? Did you read your word today? Or just your existence is only validated when the balloon goes up, when the world ends, when it all goes to hell in a handbasket, then I'll be right. Bullshit. You're probably gonna have to bleep that out. I don't care. Here's my point. You do not let what could be, don't let what could be ruin what is. And what is, as a watchman, your first ministry is your family, bro. Your wife and your kids are your resume. How well you interact with your wife and your children, and how well your household, your tent, interacts with the creator of the universe and is the hands and feet of the Son, the Lamb slain from the foundation of the world, that's your resume. That's your litmus test. Am I doing a good job or not? I don't have to look very far to see whether or not I'm doing a good job, whether you're doing a good job. So don't forsake your most important ministry as a man to steward the people the Father has trusted you with in the first place. If you go stand on the wall so that you can scream at some guy over here who claims he's also a brother, he's also Israel, but he won't hear you, which, by the way, violates Matthew 18. A brothers hear each other. If they won't hear you, you're not a brother anymore. But you're going to stand on the wall so you can scream at this guy over here while your wife and kids are not being provided for, protected, and blessed by the fact that you were put on the earth in the first place. You've negated your primary ministry, which is inside of your house. So it's all about balance, if you will. I'm on a tirade today, guys. I apologize. It's because you got me immediately after I got done playing drums.
I mean, I love learning from people like you because you have so much insight on everything. So it's fun just listening.
I don't mean to yell at you, Jake. I'm sorry. I'm not yelling at you, brother. I apologize.
No, we absolutely appreciate the enthusiasm and just, you know, the drive. I think the next thing I would like to, you know, pick your brain about is just this topic of what's going on in the nation state of Israel and the difference between scriptural Israel and the nation state, and how it seems that Christianity today is being lulled into apathy because of that whole topic. And just like you said, you know, when people are looking for the rapture, they really are kind of swayed into inactivity. They're swayed into, you know, the get out of jail free card. And there's a whole bunch of deceptions around that topic. So what is your analysis of what's going on in the nation state of Israel today, and the war between Gaza and the nation state of Israel, and you know, and this whole topic of who are truly the people of the book?
Oh my goodness. So we're just going to piss off everybody today, and that's fine. I'm good with that. Are you guys good with that?
I'm totally good with that.
Everybody good with that? Okay, cool. So nation state of Israel, propped up by the world superpowers after World War II, I think it was 1947 or 1948, directly after World War II, the Jews of Europe needed a place to go. Zionist movement, we'll give you this piece of land, which sort of coincides with Canaan, the promised land of the Old Testament. Well, the nation state of Israel, when it was founded and to this day, is a secular nation. There's not a single word in their founding documents about the creator of the universe. 75% or more of the people in the nation state of Israel are non-religious. Of the ones who are religious, the Yehudim, the Jews, elder brother Judah, they don't believe in Messiah, right? Had they believed in Messiah, they wouldn't be Orthodox Jews, right? They'd be Messianic or whatever, Torah pursuing, pick your phrase. Tel Aviv, what's it, the largest gay population on planet Earth, or second largest only to New York City, right? Yeah. Read the book. That's an abomination. Not allowed to do that. It pisses the Father off. Deuteronomy 32. Abominations provoke the Father against you. So the nation state of Israel that was instituted by men is not the people group Israel of the Bible that was blessed by the Most High. That people group is Genesis 32, when Jacob is wrestling with God, which, by the way, they call this a Christophany or Christophany. God, no man can see my face and live, he tells Moses. Okay, who did Jacob wrestle with? For I have wrestled with God and overcome. Oh, so you wrestled with the Creator made flesh. I wonder who that was. Oh, right, in the New Testament, we call him Messiah. Tracking. So Yaakov, Jacob, wrestles with God. And then he's renamed to Yisrael, Israel, Genesis 32. And because Israel means he who is striving with Elohim, he who is overcome with Elohim, and he who is ruling with Elohim, which is the pattern of behavior for us in belief. I first strove with Elohim. I was at odds with the Creator. And I overcome by the blood of the Lamb and the word of my testimony. And then my job as a man is to rule and subdue. Genesis chapter 2. Then Exodus 19 verse 6. A nation of kings and priests. Revelation 1 verse 6. A nation of kings and priests. That's what Israel is supposed to be. A nation of kings and priests unto Yahuwah or Elohim. Oh, but I'm a Gentile believer in Messiah. Awesome. Read Matthew chapter 1. Messiah is of the house of Judah, in the line of King David. Had to be in order to be the biblically prophesied Messiah of the Old Testament. Tracking. So when you believe, air quote believe, by the way, James, Jacob in the New Testament said, belief is what you do, not what you talk about, homie. When you believe in Messiah, or let's say you've entered into a covenant with Messiah, where there is always blood, in this case, the blood of his crucifixion, you are now in a ketubah marriage covenant with a Jewish guy. And he's the husband. He's the bridegroom or the bride, which means he sets the tone. So you go fast forward to Shaul of Tarsus, the Apostle Paul, Romans 11, verse 16, Gentile believers who are grafted into the tree of life. Grafted into what? The tree of life. The tree of life is a euphemism for Israel. And I'm not going to jump too far into that rabbit hole. So you're grafted in by your belief. Okay, which leads to what do we do now? Behave like an Israelite. Why? Because that's the Father's chosen people. This inheritance that Messiah talks about in all four Gospels, what does that tie back to? The conversations that the Father has with Abraham in the book of Genesis, and that will be fulfilled in the book of Revelation at the end of the book. So Israel, the nation state over there that was put in place by the world cabal in 1947, is not the Father's chosen people, Israel. As far as what's happening in Israel, the nation state over there, that, in my estimation, is a proxy war between the United States and China. I'm sorry, not China, Russia. Why? Because the United States and Russia are fighting a proxy war in Ukraine right now and have been since February 24th, 2022. So funding for Ukraine has been held up because of potential funding for Israel until very recently. That was intentional, I think, on behalf of Russia. One of Russia's primary trade partners is Iran. Iran funds and trains Hezbollah, Hamas, the Houthi rebels, and basically any terrorist group that starts with an H. It's a prerequisite for Iran for some reason. So Iran is funding Hamas, Hezbollah, the Houthis, all that. Who attacks Israel October 7th, 2023, the great eighth day of Sukkot, the festival of ingathering? Right? So the high holy day, water libation ceremony, the blood and water that pours out of the side of Messiah when he's on the stake and the Roman soldier sticks a spear in the side of him. I realize for most people this is like way over your head. I'm trying to dumb it down. I apologize. But like 9 cups of coffee today, I have a newborn. So, yeah. So, water libation ceremony, great eighth day, eighth day of Sukkot, October 7th, 2023, Hamas attacks Israel. Now, is there something else going on there? Probably, because that's one of the most well-defended borders on planet Earth. But I digress. Over 1,000 people are killed in the initial reporting, and now Israel is at war with Hamas. Who funds, equips, trains Hamas? Iran. Who's Iran's friends with? Russia. Their trade partners in Iran is providing 1/7 of Russia's war materiel to them currently in Ukraine. So Russia talks to Iran, says, hey, or Iran talks to Hamas. Hamas attacks Israel. Cool. Now the United States has to figure out what funds are we diverting? What carrier strike groups are we diverting? What people material are we diverting from Ukraine to Israel? So now we've got a two-front war going on. So the whole thing, I think, is asymmetric warfare by Russia, done incredibly well to get the U.S. involved in another war in the Middle East.
Well, what are your thoughts on the military's use of drones in combat?
I'll tell you this. They're super effective. And for everybody in the United States of America who thinks it's time for Civil War 2.0, you're going to be all the way dead super fast. Which gets back to, when you flee to the wilderness, don't bring your tracking device. Yeah. Aerial assets will ruin your day almost immediately, and they're very low cost. I mean, the MQ-9 Reaper drone that the U.S. flies, as compared to a fighter jet, way lower cost. But then you look at some of the drones like the Iranian Shahid drones. They're super low cost. Then you've got DJI drones, you know, about a $5,000 drone with a quick connect that's being used in Ukraine to drop grenades on trenches and armored vehicles, working incredibly well. And now they're getting into, China has this technology, allegedly the United States has this technology, but we're not really talking about it. But drone swarms, where instead of one drone, it's multiple drones, dozens, up to 100 drones that all come in at one time, because we're starting to get some capability, anti-drone capability. When you shoot down a $5,000 drone with a $2 million missile, at some point we're out of parity with cost here, right? And so drones are very effective, and they're available across the board. So if you don't have a drone and you are within the sound of my voice and maybe concerned about the end of the world or whatever, maybe get some, get a few. They're expendable. They're very, very good. And if you can, one that has thermal and IR, the ability to see in the dark and see heat signatures, they're great for operating at night. But I don't encourage anybody within the sound of my voice to want to fight the government. The government will win that fast. We have been blessed to do up for opposing forces for Navy SEALs. And a lot of times those Navy SEALs, there's Air Force JTAC guys there. And man, they will all the way kill you dead with a drone before you have even gotten to the target. You're infilling to the target and they hack your radio, come across your radio and say, "Hey, Bear, you're down." "What?" "Yeah, drone strike, you're down." "What the hell, bro?" "Yeah, you're down. Lay over, lay on the ground, you're dead." And that's happened many, many times. So drones are changing the battlefield significantly, and it's definitely not a threat to be slept on.
Yeah, I remember a story of a drone that was like going towards the White House or something, and it immediately went down. So they have something, some kind of barrier that shuts it off.
Yeah, so they're jamming is what they're doing. So they're broadcasting. Now, we are not allowed to do this. Thank you, FCC. But they absolutely are. They're broadcasting broad spectrum across every frequency that they can. And so inside of that bubble, you can't transmit. Outside of that bubble, you can't penetrate it if you're using something that operates on radio frequency. Once it flies into the radio frequency that I'm projecting, you lose communications with it. And it falls out of the sky or returns to base, goes back to where it came from.
Wow.
Yep.
That's all I got for drones, Jake.
Let's see here. So the topic of family and the community that you build around you is very important. I mean, we talked about all outward facing things, and I think that's one of the ploys of the system, right? Is to get us to stop focusing inwardly, like you said. Start with your first ministry, and they want you focusing outwardly. But for somebody who is prepared to focus their family, their community, their gates, what's the process of kind of coming out of the Babylonian mindset and actually being productive, being proactive in those terms? And how important is that in these days coming?
That's a good question. I think it's very much so a mindset shift from consumer to producer. What am I outsourcing to global corps every day, right? And then you begin with the basics, you know, food, water, shelter. Do I have a place to live? Do I have food to eat? Do I have water to drink? Can I drill a well? Or is there an artesian well or a pond or a creek or a stream on a piece of property that I have access to? Can I grow my own food? You know, a lot of people are very hesitant to start growing their own food. Man, I would start practicing now if you're not already. And, you know, people say, but Bear, I live in an apartment. I can't grow food. You get 3 buckets. You fill the buckets with soil, poke a couple holes in the bottom for drainage. You put a jalapeno plant in one, a tomato plant in one, and you put onions and cilantro in the other. 90 days later, you harvest all that. You make the best salsa you've ever had on your apartment patio. And you start getting the reps in now so that when you are in a position where you need to grow food or you have the opportunity to grow food, you can. You have some physical, visceral, tactile experience with it. It's not the first time. You know, these survival seed vaults are like, it's got 18,000 heirloom seeds in it. Cool. Have you ever grown these before when your life depends on it? No. So shifting that mindset from consumer to producer, if you literally just sit down and audit your life, like take a sheet of paper and just write down all the things that you're buying. There's like some things that I buy that it's going to be very difficult for me to replace, like gasoline. Like I don't have a refinery in my backyard, which means I can stockpile some gasoline. And I can also look at things that don't require gasoline. Like I have chainsaws. I love chainsaws. They're great for felling trees and making firewood. But I also have crosscut saws. I have a log splitter that runs on gasoline. But I also have splitting mauls, axes, and wedges. Right. And so learning some of the old ways, like how to shape a beam with a drawn knife, that's cool. I can go to the lumber yard and I can buy lumber, but that's consumer burning gasoline. Or I can use trees that the father has given me to build something on my property. Now, you can get too far in that direction, in my experience, because it's like a pendulum. People go from living in the big city, consuming everything, they swing all the way the other direction. Now they live out in the country and they're like, they eat grasshoppers, you know, and they're wearing like a skirt that they made out of grass and that's it. And like, they look like, you know, some kind of like modern day John the Baptist, right? There is a cost benefit analysis to this. You know, oh no, studs are $6 a piece at Home Depot. That's super expensive. Yeah. Versus how long would it take for you to make 1 2x4 8 foot long, right? And so still, you can still do the cost benefit analysis. You know, I buy bulk foods, grains that I put up in 5 gallon buckets for preparedness reasons, because the father has told me I need 7 years of food put back based upon the model of Joseph in the Old Testament, Genesis. I don't grow the wheat that I'm putting in the buckets. I don't grow the rice that I'm putting in the buckets. I earn money doing all the things that Bear does. And then I convert some of that pretend rectangular green fiat currency into real assets, which is rice, grain, corn, you know, cows. And a lot of people get wrapped around the axles with that too, because how much money you earn has become this gigantic pissing contest in America. It's all make-believe, bro. Like that money has literally no value. Like none. Like there's, it's not backed by gold. It's not backed by silver. Hell, it's barely backed by oil and the might of the U.S. military these days. So that has no value. So if I can trade you a piece of fake green paper, or better yet, ones and zeros on the bank's computer for land, for a house, for a truck, for cows, I'm in. I'm 10 out of 10 times I'm in on that. I want hard assets now that I can use now. And not everybody is going to be great at homesteading or great at living rurally. That's okay too. I can't garden at all. That doesn't mean I don't do it. I'm just not good at it. I don't know why. It's not a gifting the Father gave me. But I'm really good at producing meat. And my next door neighbor, who's a brother, is really good at gardening. And on his property, he's got row crops and gardens and like vegetable agriculture. He's killing it. On my side of the fence, I don't have any of that going on this year. But I got cows, and I got sheep, and I got chickens, and I got turkeys, and I got livestock guardian dogs, and cool. And when I have meat, I'll give him meat. And when he has potatoes, he'll give me potatoes. Boom, community, intentional living. And so a lot of people get wrapped around the axles with the idea of like an intentional community. Why? We don't sit around the fire and sing Kumbaya, my Lord, Kumbaya, strum the guitar. There's no giant punch bowl filled with Kool-Aid and poison. We're just living life together to the best of our ability. So there's a circle of people in my life that I'm going to go to first when I need something. I'll try and do business with my brothers, my neighbors, and my friends first. I'll try and coordinate with them first before I go outside of that circle. You know, oh, this, the carburetor on the four-wheeler is gummed up again. I could take it to the shop in town, or I could take it to my brother three doors over, and who am I going to pay? I like the internal circular economy of brothers operating in unity intentionally. And a lot of people, when they're like, I'm going to bug out when the SHTF, bro, to where? With who? Right? Oh, well, I got four families. We're all going to this corner of the national forest. Wow, that sounds like an intentional community. Except for you've done nothing to this point to prepare that place for you when you arrive. So Pastor Joe likes to say, leave early, avoid the rush. That's what we did. Come out of her, my people. So now we live rurally with people that we love, doing life together, studying, spending Shabbat together, the whole nine, but also producing as much as we can, not consuming. Doesn't mean that I don't consume, but I try and consume as little as possible, and I try and produce as much as possible. And the longer you stick with it, the more momentum you gain. And there's a biblical principle in that, Leviticus 25 in the Shemitah year. You work your land for 6 years, you let it rest on the seventh. But in the sixth year, meaning you kept with it, years 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and 6, 6 years in a row, you stayed on top of it, you kept with it. Then the sixth year, the Father will command his blessing on that sixth year, and you'll get a threefold harvest in the sixth year, so that the land can rest, have a Sabbath of rest for the land, a year, the Shemitah year, in the seventh year. So in the sixth year, you get food for the sixth year, the seventh year, and the eighth year. Because in the eighth year, which is year one of planting again, it's going to take time for that crop to grow and produce again. So the Father says, hey man, if you'll keep my Sabbath for the land, like in the sixth day, prep day, you gather a double portion. So you got food for Friday and Saturday. Well, with the Shemitah year, in the sixth year, he goes, I'm going to give you a triple blessing on letting your land rest in the seventh year. So you got food for year 6, 7, and 8. Brilliant. But the whole concept is audit your life, sit down, write out, literally write out, do the homework. What am I consuming? What am I touching every day? Where did this come from? How much control do I have over these inputs on my life? Probably not that much. Okay. What could I do differently to have more input on where these things come from? I lived on a third of an acre in North Texas. In my backyard, we had 11 raised beds, row crops. This was before Torah. We had meat rabbits. We had meat chickens in little tractors that we drug around the backyard. We had laying hens, berry bushes, fruit trees, and mature nut trees on a third of an acre in a backyard. And with a half an hour of time per day, it provided 40% of the calories that my family ate. Half an hour a day. So it's totally doable if you shift your mindset from consumer to producer.
Wow, that's amazing that you guys were able to accomplish that on such small land. And I think that really gives encouragement to people out there that they really can get started, even if they don't have the big homestead out in the wilderness, like you're talking about, that people are aiming for. You know, it's better to just get started and get that practice into play so that you actually know what you're doing, and you don't just show up at the state park saying, all right, well, we're here. what are we going to do now that the world's collapsing? I think it's a really interesting parallel with how the judgment that we incur when society collapses really does seem to reflect in some ways the people we surround ourselves with. So if you're surrounding yourself with the people that have the mindset to do this kind of self-dependent, proactive, interconnected society outside of the B system, right, your judgment's going to be less difficult to go through because you're going to have those people to fall back on and depend on. While in comparison, if you are depending on your drinking buddies in the inner city that think on nothing but filth and, you know, wickedness, then, you know, whenever thing collapses, you're looking at a Mad Max style judgment going on where people are eating each other, right? And it's a really interesting parallel with the wheat and the tares being separated and separating themselves through, you know, proactivity into, you know, kind of, you know, a buffer from the collapse of society. And we've seen, so here's my question, we've seen over the past few years, I would say since, you know, 2016-ish, very divisive topics come on the world, almost as like what seems to be litmus tests for people. And every time a test comes on the world stage, there's a more of a separation happening. I like to maybe think of it as like Gideon's army. You know, he started with a bunch of people, and then these series of tests kind of were played out that really did, you know, cut that number down in the end to those who passed every test. And so back in 2016, we had the Trumpers, the never Trumpers, the pro-abortion, the, you know, whatever. We had the BLM, the, you know, seeing through all that kind of stuff really kind of separated different groups of people. And then, of course, you know, we have in 2020, the pro-V, anti-V, you know, a variety of tests is what I'm getting at. And so my question would be, what do you believe coming in the near future are some tests that are going to be laid out? And, you know, those are tests in the past. What's coming in the future?
Oh, gosh. All right. So this ain't, I am not preaching or prophesying, just so we're all on the same page, okay? I'm just, for lack of a better word, trying to read the tea leaves here. There's a turn of phrase that's used in the Bible 87 times. It's scarcity of food, also called famine. When you see scarcity of food, it's actually threefold. It's scarcity of food, famine, war, or the sword, as it's referred to, depending on which translation you have, and plague or pestilence. These three things go together. We've seen systematic attacks on American food infrastructure, right? Like hundreds of food warehouses. I mean, even the Azure Standard, right? Their warehouse was somehow mysteriously burnt, right? That's been happening. Infrastructure attacks, civil unrest, which is absolutely fomented by outside bad actors, George Soros, right? And is it a coincidence that in 2020 we had BLM riots, and in 2024, both of which are election years, now we're having pro-Palestinian riots? No, it's not a coincidence. Never let an emergency go to waste, whatever it is, a crisis go to waste. Rahm Emanuel, I think, said that. So forecasting out what's going to happen, I think it's going to get worse before it gets better. I'd say in the next 6 months, societally here in the United States of America, there's going to be even more of a ramp up. I would expect to see more of the anti-public safety sentiment that we saw in 2020, like all cops, ACAB, all cops are bastards, all that crap. Potentially some more autonomous zones like they had up in Seattle, Chaz Chop. Costs are going to go up. Stagflation, we've got it. Our United States monetary policy is trash. We're sending a bunch of money overseas. And we've got these small, relatively contained regional conflicts in Ukraine and in Israel right now. Although China and the Philippines are really kind of poking at each other right now, and that could pop off. There's been a lot of talk over the last few years about China's optimum window to take Taiwan. I don't know that that's going to happen anytime soon. It could, But I think China is way weaker than people think that it is, especially economically. And while COVID in the Western world wasn't terribly bad, a lot of the reporting, third party independent reporting on China, is that it was actually really bad there. Like, they actually lost a lot of people there. So couple that with the fact that China imports almost everything, fuel, food, technology. They steal a lot of technology. They import a lot of things. And right now, with the global situation, you know, the United States hegemony versus BRICS, Brazil, Russia, India, China, South Africa, Saudi Arabia, et al., these two kind of conflicting, Cold War-ish type entities, China's suffering economically. So I don't know if China's going to take Taiwan anytime soon. They like to talk about how they can, but I don't think that they're going to. I think the war in Ukraine drags on. It will continue to drag on. The Biden administration is quietly working on legislation that will fund the Ukraine war for the next 10 years. Wow. That's ridiculous. I don't think Israel, Hamas, Israel, Palestine, Israel, Iran is going away anytime soon, because the sons of Ishmael and the sons of Isaac have been at each other's throats for 3,500 years. And I don't expect it to stop anytime soon. In fact, I think the person that makes that stop is the Antichrist. And a whole bunch of people are going to go, that's the guy, he brought world peace. And they've never read 2 Thessalonians chapter 2. And so when they go, that's the guy, they'll be pointing at the Antichrist, not the Christ, Messiah. That's a completely different rabbit hole. Here domestically, cost of living is going to continue to go up. The need for housing is going to outpace the availability of housing, which is going to drive up rents and mortgages, which of course is also contributed to by the weakening of the US dollar because our monetary policy sucks. So that's going to lead to an increase in homelessness, which is going to suck. All of this to say, get out while you can. Like, leave early, avoid the rush, get out while you can. Move to the country into maybe a smaller house that costs you less money. Maybe you have to take a slightly lower paying job. That's fine. Start producing as much as you can now, because I don't think we're in end times. I do think we're in end stage empire. And the next 2 to 4 years for the United States of America could be very potentially bad. You've also got this huge threat from the southern border. Minimum 400,000 military age males that have infiltrated from the southern border. And I live relatively in the middle of nowhere. In my county, the sheriff's department interdicted 10 men of, we'll just say, Middle Eastern descent, all dressed in full battle rattle in a state park running combat drills. And those 10 dudes just vanished back into the woods. There have been, I'm friends with a lot of the law enforcement around here because we train with them. There have been an inordinate number of people from Central and South America walking through my county on foot with no papers, no English, no nothing, just birth certificates from their nation of origin. And I live in eastern Oklahoma in the middle of nowhere. And so if that's happening here, I imagine it's happening everywhere else as well. I mean, literally, Ron DeSantis is suing the federal government because 150,000 of 200,000 military age males, I think from Venezuela, were specifically shipped from the border to Florida in probably an effort to stuff ballots for the Democratic Party, who took your taxpayer dollars to facilitate those people getting here in the first place. So the whole thing, man, like, our hope does not lie in man. I have no hope whatsoever for the federal government at all to solve my problems. I want to be as far removed from the federal government and the problems that it creates as possible. I want it to have as little influence on my life as possible. Render unto Caesar's what is Caesar's. Yep, tracking, got that. But I'm also going to give Caesar as little as possible, as little as legally possible per my CPA, because a 70% effective taxation rate is absurd. It's usury. It's ridiculous. The father asked for 10%. right? Like 10% is good enough for the creator of the universe. I got to give Joe Biden seven times that? No, thank you. So all that to say, I think it's very much so. You brought up wheat and tares, the separating the sheep from the goats. It's a sifting. We are in a period of sifting. And if you look at the parable of the wheat and the tares, which gets plucked out first? The tares. The tares gets plucked out first and then burnt. And then you harvest the wheat. So for everybody out there who's still suffering under the illusion of John Darby's 1850 rapture doctrine, what gets plucked out of the earth is the bad stuff. So back to you, Jake.
I did want to have you share on Caleb House and what's being done to combat human trafficking, and maybe your commentary on this big, you know, conservative push for movies like The Sound of Freedom in 2023, and kind of the agenda behind, you know, getting all everybody to support that film and that concept, but what versus what you guys are doing, and I'm getting a little bit of loose at the mouth there, but yeah, please share with us what you're doing with Caleb House.
It's a loose at the mouth day, brother. So you're in good company. Don't worry. I don't think I've said a coherent thing since I got on with y'all, so I apologize. Caleb House, Caleb with a K, K-A-L-E-B, house.org. Caleb House is our juvenile human trafficking survivor restoration facility, which is a bunch of $50 words that means it's the place where we put kiddos that have been rescued after being serially raped by assholes back together again. And I got involved in anti-human trafficking very reluctantly. I did not want to do this, but the Father laid this calling at my feet. We were working at another restoration facility. Grindstone was our first 501c3. And the Father basically said, I was talking to him praying, and I said, hey, this is awesome what you're doing here. We got to have more of these. And he said, yeah, and you're going to build them. I said, whoa, homie, slow down. I don't know anything about running a restoration facility. He said, you build the buildings, I'll handle the rest. Yes, sir, tracking. And so we started Caleb House, 501c3, nationally registered nonprofit organization. And we do restoration. See, in the United States of America, about $150 million per year is spent on anti-human trafficking. 90% of that, 150, so 135 million, is spent on awareness. There are literal nonprofit organizations that are two people that receive grants to the tune of millions and millions of dollars to make Instagram posts about raped kids bad, human trafficking bad. So 135 million of the money that's spent each year is on awareness. Guys, we know that, I know it's a problem. We don't need any more awareness. I get it. 10% is spent on rescue. And rescue is good. We need to rescue these kids. We need to convict these POSs that are doing these terrible things to these children. 0% is spent on restoration, which means these kids, after they've been rescued, there's no aftercare pipeline for them to go to. Very rarely is there a facility that's equipped to be able to receive these kids. DHS, the Department of Homeland Security, HSI, Homeland Security Investigations, is the agency, one of three, that has oversight on human trafficking. So yay federal government, super conflicting information between the Attorney General's Office, Child Protective Services, and DHS, HSI. But anyway, DHS claims 420 beds nationwide for juvenile human trafficking survivors. For context, there's 17,000 beds that Customs and Border Patrol and ICE Immigration, 17,000 beds for illegal, I don't even know what the PC word is anymore, illegal immigrants here in the United States of America. They have 17,000 and they're lobbying Congress for another 150,000 for illegal immigrants. And there's 420 beds nationwide through DHS for trafficked kids. Those 420 beds don't belong to DHS. They belong to four nonprofits that provide those beds. Now you may be thinking, 420 beds, that sounds adequate. The problem is 17,000 children per month go missing in the United States of America. 17,000 per month. So when those beds are full, and DHS doesn't pay for those beds, they're operated by NGOs, nonprofits. The DHS budget works out to per bed $357,000 per bed per year. Caleb House, we're building a restoration facility. Caleb House, to build it, costs $117,000 per bed. And that includes the OPEX, operational expenses, of the first year. And then after the first year, after it's built, the cost per bed goes down to $17,000 per kiddo per year. So literally 1/20th of what it costs the federal government to do it. And they're not even doing it. They're just pipelining over to NGOs. So the reason we got involved with this is that there's no or very little aftercare pipeline for kids who have been trafficked. And so what happens is those trafficked kids end up going back into the circumstances that got them trafficked in the first place. 78% of children polled who have been trafficked know the person who trafficked them. And so there's very much so a mental image of kids in cages being stuffed in the back of trucks and driven across borders. And that does happen. That's called human smuggling. But that's not the most common scenario. Human trafficking is by definition the exploitation of one human by another. The exploitation of one human by another. So anywhere you have exploitation, you have trafficking. And so more typically what it looks like is grandma has a meth addiction, and so she lets her granddaughter hang out with the weird uncle for an hour a week. That's trafficking. Or mom can't pay the rent, and so, you know, the kid's got to go have a sleepover at Uncle Timmy's house or whatever. Or literally people pimping out their children or selling their children on the black market. Or, and this is sickening, there's entire businesses and business models that have been set up with daycares and private schools and even foster homes specifically to be a pipeline for children to traffic. And so be very careful who you let your children around. You have no idea who these people are and what they're doing. And the people that are doing this trafficking, by and large, you would expect them to be like absolute scumbags. You'd be able to see him from 300 yards away and know that that guy's a piece of trash. Don't go anywhere near him. It's not the case. It's almost always, I would have never suspected that guy. He was such a nice guy. He was so good with the kids. Everybody loved him. It's almost always somebody that fits that type of description, because they're a front for these cartels and these organizations that are trafficking these children, using them as product. And so we're building Caleb House. When we get Caleb House 1 up and online, we'll have 60 beds. And then I'm going to build Caleb House 2, Caleb House 7, Caleb House 23, until we don't need any more beds, until the problem has been solved and or I'm dead. We also do rescue. I did not start in this space wanting to do rescue. I frankly have zero interest in doing rescue, but it does have to happen on occasion. And so currently I've got 19 people in my care, ages 1 to 19, that are in three different safe sites right now that are staffed 24/7, 365 while I'm building the restoration facility, because we started with the mission of build the restoration facility. And in the process of doing that, we got a phone call. There were people who needed to get out. So we went and got them out. And then we went and got more people out. And we went and got more people out. And we went and got more people out. And so we've got a gaggle of people in our care that we're taking care of, you know, mental, physical, emotional, spiritual, educational, financial, putting these children back together again so that they can be restored and they can be a net positive to society, not a drain on society, that this isn't, the circumstances of your trafficking isn't the defining moment of your life. Overcoming the circumstances of your trafficking is the defining moment of your life. And now you've weaponized the trauma that has been perpetrated on you to go out there and be the light and help other people in this position as well. And so that's what we're doing with Caleb House. I don't know what other questions you might have specific to Caleb House, but I'll try and answer them if I can.
How can our audience like get involved or help, or, you know, is there like a website?
Yeah. CalebHouse.org, CalebHouse.org. And I'll say this too. I'm not shilling for anybody or anything. I don't want a dime of your money if the spirit does not convict you. Just to be perfectly obvious, I want $0 from you if you don't have a conviction from the Ruach HaKodesh to participate in this. Because the one unforgivable sin is to be working against the Holy Spirit. I'm not going to do that. And so if you're not convicted to participate in what we got going on, that's cool. That doesn't make you a scumbag. That doesn't make you a bad person. It just means not a good fit. I'm totally fine with that. But if you are, do your homework. You can find us at CalebHouse.org. Our financials are posted there. They're called 990s. A 501c3 is required to post their 990s. We have a line item in our budget. It's called hood rat shit. It's called hood rat shit for a reason. Because there are times we have to have plate carriers and rifles and helmets and nods and go do hood rat shit to get people out. We can't discuss the means and methods, the TTPs, any of the details with that. It just know that that is a thing that we do. And so if you look at the budget and you see hood rat shit, what is that? That includes body armor. But everything else is taking care of the kids, putting them back together again. And I'll tell you, when we started this, I do not know everything there is to know about this. We've made several mistakes over the years, but praise the Father, they were opportunities to learn. And we're still figuring this out. But what we're learning as we're doing this is so is everybody else. Everybody else in the space that we're talking to. Nobody, like there's no hard and fast rules yet. We're literally establishing case law precedent in several different states at the same time. Because these pieces of trash who have done this to these children have never been tried before. We're establishing case law in multiple different states at the same time. So like nobody knows what they're doing, and the federal agencies that have oversight on it are 0% interested in helping. You can't just pick up the phone and call Bob at the Attorney General's office and be like, hey, Bob, I got a question about this trafficking stuff. Oh, yeah, T, great to hear from you. What do you got? That doesn't exist. But they'll give you a 5,000-page long binder of information to answer the question, what size did the bedrooms need to be at the care house? 5,000 pages long. And so we're figuring it out, bro. I think we're doing a pretty good job thus far. And the goal is to lessons learned on Caleb House 1 and take that and apply all those lessons to Caleb House 2 and do the same thing with Caleb House 3, Caleb House 4, Caleb House 5. So forth and so on. So
that's awesome.
How did you choose the name Caleb House? What led you to pick that particular name?
I love that guy. So there's a dude named Joshua in the Bible. There's Moses' right-hand man. Joshua, Yahushua, the son of Nun. And as the Israelites are wandering in the wilderness the first time, the first 40 days, Moshe, he's like, hey, guys, it's time to go to the promised land. And a bunch of the Israelites are like, I don't want to. There's giants in there, and there's, you know, it's terrible. I don't want to go. And so this plot is hatched. We'll get 12 spies, one from each of the tribes, and we'll go and we'll spy out the promised land. Then they'll come back and give us a report. So they do that. They come back. There's only two that gave a good report, Joshua being one, Caleb being the other. Well, because the children of Israel rejected the promised land, they wander a day for a year, 40 years in the wilderness, until that wicked and adulterous generation dies off, and then the next generation goes into the promised land. The book of Joshua, most people miss that to take the promised land was 5 years of warfare. When the Israelites go into the promised land, there were 5 years of warfare. After the land is settled, Caleb looks to Joshua and he says, hey, I like that mountain. This is the New Living Bear translation. He says, hey, I like that mountain and I'd like to have it. And Joshua says, bro, the sons of the Anakim live up there. There's giants up in those hills, bro. Caleb says, yeah, and what do you got? And Joshua says, if you can take it, you can have it. Caleb's 85 years old at this point. And Caleb looks at Joshua and he says, I'm as good today as I was the day Moshe tapped us on the shoulder to go spy out the land. That was 45 years earlier. And then Caleb looks at his homies and he says, hey, boys, grab your swords. We're going up the mountain. We're going to go kill some giants. And they go up there. That mountain was Hebron. They go up there and they slay the sons of Anakim. And that becomes Caleb's inheritance, Hebron. Same mountain where the threshing floor, what's it, Obed's threshing floor, where the Ark of the Covenant is stored, that David buys. And then that becomes the Temple Mount. Like, that piece of land, the first time an Israelite stepped foot on it was Caleb. And he was up there slaying giants in the Promised Land. And I think there's a lesson in that for all of us. Just because the Father says he's going to bring you into the Promised Land doesn't mean you're not going to need a sword when you get there. And just because you've been at war for 5 years doesn't mean there still aren't giants to slay in the Promised Land. And sometimes it just takes that will and that resolve to be like, yes, I will march up this mountain at 85 years old and absolutely body some giants because it's what's good for the nation of Israel. And so Caleb's just a badass. I love him.
That's awesome. Well, I know we could talk with you forever, Bear, with a lot of variety of topics, but I think I'm getting kicked out of my campsite, so we're going to have to wrap it up.
Yeah, you better go.
All right, man. Well, it's been an honor to have you on the show, and we'd love to have you back. It's been fascinating.
Yeah, 100%.
Awesome, man. So where can our audience go to find your channel, find everything?
Just Google Bear Independent. You'll find me. I'm very Googleable. So you'll even find a website that says I'm a false prophet, which I'm just like, I'm honored. I appreciate that. So that's cool. You should read that guy's website too. It's a good laugh. All right, guys, I got to pee as well. I really appreciate your time. This was wonderful.
Yeah. We'll see you soon. Hopefully.
Shalom.
Yeah, thanks for coming on.
Later.
Shalom.
Beautiful, handcrafted tzitzits by Sierra Grant. What is the OG WWJD? It's wearing fringes on your garments. In accordance to Numbers chapter 15, verse 38 through 40, speak unto the children of Israel, and bid them that they make them fringes in the borders of their garments throughout their generations, and that they put a cord of blue in it.
If you like what we do here on Skiba News Nation, please like and subscribe, and also share with others so that we can grow the biggest truth-seeking community on the internet. Huge shout out to all of our Patreon supporters. We couldn't do this show without you, so I just wanted to say thank you. And if you want to help support us, go to patreon.com/SkibaNewsNation.